So now, after we covered the planned reuse of systems, we now go to the process. You have a piece of software, you have an existing architecture, and now you want to change your system. So what are the options here? And in this case, a very typical thing is the idea of, which is called refactoring, and I really think it's a very strange font, but it's still readable. So therefore, the question is first, how to change the architecture of a system, and the second one is how do you refactor existing system, and what is refactoring, and how do you do refactoring, and how does this relate to the notion of bad smells in code? So the classical book is from Martin Fowler. So I'm very impressed by Martin Fowler, and he's currently writing a book about NoSQL databases. So he is also always, I think, a very leading guy. So he who sees when a certain technology reaches more or less maturity, and so he was the very first one to more or less write a book about refactoring, even though the idea existed earlier. And the idea is more or less he wrote a very nice readable book, how to do refactoring. And nowadays, for you, refactoring is nothing new because you see these buttons in your IDE. Yeah, so these are all these buttons of renaming variables, doing global moving classes in the class hierarchy, factoring out repeating code into subroutines or methods. And that's more or less what it goes back to the initial work of Martin Fowler and his colleagues. So therefore, this was really a very important step from an idea, more or less, which had been well documented as a discipline, more or less. How should you go? How should you do this? And what is more or less the pragmatics behind it? To creating tool support for this well-documented and formally or systematically defined practice. Let's see, can I do this? Yeah, no. Okay, so therefore, the idea is now that we look at evolution of software systems without architectural changes. So the idea is we have still the architecture that is still valid, but within the architecture we have changes. And these architectural changes themselves are very expensive, and the architectural changes initially decrease the quality of the system, and they may require retraining of developers and updates of neighboring systems. So therefore, the reason that they are hard to change and they have the risk of producing side effects leads to this so-called piggyback. So piggyback is how would you call it in German? So in English, it's a very established word. So that you put something on top of the other. So you patch things. Yeah? You don't change the root cause, but you put something on top of it. So the idea is that you introduce changes which quietly violate the architectural rules. So for example, functionalities are introduced in the system often by bypassing the interfaces which should be used but are not totally adequate. Yeah, because you don't want to change the interface, so therefore you go around the interface and you violate encapsulation. Or parts of the code are not used anymore or duplicated. Yeah, so there are some routines which shouldn't be called, and then they either don't use them at all, and your code checker more or less would warn you that this is an unreachable code. But you say, I don't touch this because maybe in some other project variation or some other derivative work, it's still being used, and I don't try to touch it. Or that you try not to write the code as compact as possible, but that you introduce redundancy. So these are small changes which more or less make the architecture more difficult to understand. And the more difficult the architecture gets to understand, the more likely is that the next person doesn't change the architecture either and says, I add more piggyback code. Yeah? And that then is called architectural degradation, so that after a while the system becomes unmaintainable. Yeah, so therefore, this is really what is happening right now in several areas of banking industry, that they now have so old systems which have been patched and patched and patched that they really now have to bite the bullet and go for a total replacement. So therefore, the vision, more or less, or more or less the imperative, how we call it, because that's something very tightly bound to the idea of, how would you call it, ethics of programmers, is that you should keep the system healthy and alive. Yeah, so therefore, the idea is that the requirements, the architecture, the design and implementation are still aligned through continuous stepwise managed evolution. Yeah, that's more or less the idea of evolution, that you not only evolve the code, but you also then after a while, if the code gets out of shape, it violates, for example, the code violates the design, then you change the design. And if the design again changes, violates the architecture, you change the architecture. And that's more or less the important point, yeah? That you don't jump from changed requirements to changed code, which is typically done in the evolution phase. Yeah, you have here the requirements and you jump to the code, but that you say, no, I change the code, I do this, I go like a good programmer, I find out, okay, this is my changed requirement, and then I go to the code and try to fix the code so that the code matches the requirements. But while I'm doing this, I realize that there is a design law, like a public or private definition, and I have to change the public and private definition, and then I don't do something ugly here, patching the code with piggyback code to keep the design valid or to keep it locally valid, but I change also the design. Yeah, so I look now at the superclass definition, or I look at the public or private definition, and then if I change this, it may lead to the case that even the architecture that underlies the system has to be changed. Yeah. So therefore, this means managed evolution, that you not lightheartedly ignore the architecture, but you go into the trouble of changing the architecture, knowing that changing the architecture is typically a very difficult thing. So therefore, in order to do this, that you it remains really requires a very dramatic shift in the, how would you call it, the mentality of the maintenance staff, because typically the maintenance staff is seen in old corporations, the maintenance staff is seen as these the young students that patch the code, and since these young students are not capable of understanding the full picture, they are essentially forced into this patching mode. Whereas in a mature organization, people try to really mix very well the best trained developers with the maintenance staff, so that they are also enabled and also encouraged to do changes also of design artifacts and architectural elements. And the buzzword there is refactoring. So therefore, the idea is you have principles. The very first thing is that if you, as a programmer, realize that there's unused code or dysfunctional code, which is, for example, written very ugly, that you don't say what is typical for maintenance people, never change a running team, yeah, because this code worked in before, so I don't touch it. Yeah, that's the mentality risk-averse organizations have, that they say, okay, I cannot change code if it's not extremely necessary. And here the principle is you should change this code. Let's see why this works. The second thing is, refactor the code and the interfaces as soon as the program becomes difficult to change. Yeah. So if you realize that the program here, the changes you want to do, if you want to change this, you want to move here, that these are not supported by the existing design or by the existing interfaces which are given by the design, by the contracts from the design, that you really go into the trouble of changing the interfaces. Yeah. And if you change this interface, it may be the case that you also have to change other code. That is, it looks like a very dangerous thing, because from a small change, you now propagate this change in the system. So if the refactoring does not match existing architecture, consider architectural changes which have to be consistent with strategic business requirements. Yeah, so it may be the case that you then have to more or less call your boss, more or less, and say, okay, sorry, we have a problem. We have to implement this. But our project line architecture or architectural blueprints don't allow for doing this. What should we do? Yeah, so that you get away from a classical attitude of saying, this is not my business, I'm not allowed to do it, to go to an attitude of saying, no, here I help So we don't do a full requirements analysis with the architects, but we do it more or less evolution, that we start with the code, propagating changes to design, and soon as we realize architectural changes, we then talk about, based on the requirements here, what would be the best solution with the architecture. Okay, let's start now. How is this done in concrete? The unfortunate thing is now I don't cannot run a demo on this machine. In the past, I always had a research assistant with me that had an IDE open so that you could see what's going on. But if you look the book from Fowler, all these steps are very cleanly defined. So now look at this example. That's very typical. So the idea is, this is the abstract perspective of the program. The idea is you have a movie rental software. So you have customers, you have rentals, movie rentals, and if you do a movie rental, you not only you buy one movie, yeah, and the movie is stored in the product catalog. Each movie has a string and a price code. If you rent the movie, you determine the number of days you rented the movie, and then in the end you want to compute a statement, more or less the bill for the user, which more or less says, okay, how expensive is this rental after 5 days? You have to multiply the price code with the number of days rented. Okay, so that's more or less the basic idea. Now you see that there are three kinds of movies which evolved over time. You have regular movies, children's movies, and new releases. So the statement method more or less produces the print statement and the customer charges at the video store. What also happens is a hidden thing that the statement routine also calculates the frequent renter points, something like a bonus program, which vary depending on whether the film is a new release. Yeah? So if you buy many new releases, which are expensive, then you get frequent renter points, and then as a bonus, perhaps you get one new film after 10 for free. Now that's the basic idea. So this more or less is the thing. And if you look now at the code, this is now the initial, so this is the original code for the statement method. Yeah, the statement method is this method in the customer class. And what does it do? It looks rather reasonable. You start with total amount of zero, and then you start with an additional frequent renter points of zero, and then you produce more or less the result, which is the string that should be returned to your user, or to the user interface where you print a bill. And the heading of this output is rental record for getName. So getName is the method of the current object, which is the customer, so that you get the customer name. And then you iterate over all rentals, and then you compute this amount, which is determined the amount for each line. And then based on the movie get price code, it's either a regular movie or a new release movie or a children's movie. You then compute either this amount plus two for the regular movies, and for each day rented, which is if it meant it for longer than 2 days, you have to pay for each extra day $1.50. And if you have a new release, then you have to pay for each day rented independently how young you have it, $3. And if a children movie is, then you have to pay $1.50. And if you didn't return it after 3 days, then you have to pay $1.50 for each extra day. Okay, so that's more or less the statement method. And then you do, additionally, you have these frequent renter points. After you did the switch, you look, you increment the frequent renter points. You get one frequent renter point for each rented movie, and you add a bonus for a 2-day rental release for if each movie.getPrinted price code is movie.newrelease, and each day rented greater than one, then add one additional frequent renter point. And then this loop should finish, and at the end, you add, the switch statement, the if statement finishes, and then you add for each of these points the name of the title of the movie, the value of this amount, and the total is incremented by the value. And at the end, you write a final footer line. The amount owed is string value of total amount. You earned blah, 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 frequent vendor points, frequent vendor points. And then you return the string as a result. Okay, so this is obviously not the nicest code you have ever seen in your life, but this is code you would typically find in production. And then what happens now? So this is the code is existed, and now you have a requirement change. Yeah, so we have now a requirement change, namely, or we have two requirement changes. One is that the statement should be not formatted as a string, but or an ASCII string, but it should be formatted as HTML. And the second requirement is that the movies are classified should be changed. So, and I realize that you have to go to your train, so that perhaps this is a point to stop. So we will learn the next week how this refactoring is being done, and perhaps I can even bring a machine so that we can do this refactoring on a computer with a research assistant who is more capable than I to hitting the right buttons there. Okay, so enjoy the evening. You can ask questions, those that stay here, the other ones have a safe trip home, and see you next week.